Fixated Soul Podcast. This is Joe.
And this is Sean.
Thank you for joining us for this
banging episode.
I just want to go pew, 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 pew. On this one, we're going to talk about guns in Korea. It's like, what? There are guns in Korea? There can be guns in Korea. And we always hear about this in America, but as you saw with what happened with our neighbor next door a few weeks ago, shooting former Prime Minister Shinzo Abe, well, you know, guns do exist, whether you make them or you buy them.
Yeah, and then that DIY variety is most common in Korea. Well, I mean, no, not the most common. I shouldn't say that. We'll get into it, but it's an issue. Because
Sean, I mean, you're from the Canada. You're from the countryside. Have you ever shot guns?
Yeah, I have. People hunt all the time.
You hunted? You ever kill anything with your gun?
I've never hunted myself, no.
Ah.
Mm-hmm. But I grew up eating hunted meat, moose, rabbit. Nothing like a rabbit stew, man. In a moose roast. Delicious.
Canadian thing we've heard on this podcast.
and it's, you know, and it's directly from nature. It's a organized system that maintains the population of the animals, and then people get food. A lot of people in Newfoundland when I was growing up, but I'd imagine it's still the way today is people depended on hunting.
Yeah, it's a bonus. It's a bonus. You don't have to go to the Piggly Wiggly as much.
I have no idea what that is. I don't know what you're talking about. That's probably the most southern. Is that the most southern thing we've heard on
the
podcast?
It's the most southern thing you heard. A southern supermarket. You can ever think of the Piggly Wiggly.
That's a weird name. That's cool though. Yeah, but I mean, like, yeah, and then the idea of hunting and people, kind of view hunting as being a little bit backwards and that kind of thing. But I'm like, no, because hunting takes you a little bit more out of the capitalist system.
Yeah. So, and you know, there wouldn't have been any growth for Bambi as a character.
But the best part of Bambi is Thumper.
Thumper's great because he's Twitter pated.
Mm. Yeah, that's right. He's like, look, it's stiff.
The water's stiff.
The water's stiff.
The water's stiff. Mm. Yeah.
But guns.
I've shot a few guns. big old things that like had so much kick they bruised my arm, my shoulder for a week.
Mm.
And I've done some handguns. You know what? On an actual shooting range, I'm not as good as I am on the Nintendo.
Not as good with the real gun as you are with the light gun.
Yep. Not as good because you know, with the Nintendo, I can point it straight at the screen.
Right. Joe is the 1986 duck hunt champion of Alabama.
Oh yeah, man. I could totally get duck hunt, man. Loved it. Still, duck hunt is still a fun game. Those games are still fun. And I still love shooting games.
Yes. Yeah.
I don't like them in real life. And guns in real life. It takes me a while when I'm at the shooting range to get used to it. I know American listeners are going to be like, well, nothing wrong with that. And I'm like, yeah, but you're okay. As much as you're exposed to guns and movies and TV, I don't think it prepares you for the actual violence of energy emitting from that device when you pull that trigger.
Yeah.
It is so strong.
Yeah. It's a tool designed to kill. And I think it's strange when people say, no, they're not. I was like, no, yeah, they are. It's exactly what they're designed for. Either killing animals for food or
they were designed for art.
Yeah, right. Yeah. See ya.
Or home improvement.
Yeah. Gotta take off a bit of the siding there.
Yeah, I need a new hole for my picture frame. You So. I'm glad someone designed a gun for this home maintenance.
Right. So Korea, like, very famously is with quote unquote gun free, but it's not gun free. It's comparatively gun free. It's comparatively gun less full of guns.
It's gun controlled.
Very, very gun controlled. But they're not absent. And and as you said, yeah, like in the wake of what happened in Japan, I thought about the some similar events that happened in Korea, and then Joe and I chatted about it, and then we said, okay, let's do that, that will be an episode.
Like, you know, the guy that shot Abe with his little homemade gun. Imagine if he just got something like you can get in America with a high magazine counts and semi-automatic. Think about what all I could do. But then again, Abe was his main target. He wasn't trying to shoot anyone else.
Right. Yeah.
It was actual an assassination. It wasn't like,
yes,
the American one of, so, I want a Wikipedia article made about me. I'm going to die in a blaze of glory.
It's so strange. I don't understand going into a school that wants to kill children. It's so,
I'm so far removed.
Yeah, I'm so far removed from that that I just, yeah, that's unfathomable. It's just strange. But Korea's history with guns really goes back to goes way back, not as far back as, say, Europe, not even as far back as Japan, but the tiger hunters. The end of the 1800s, they had guns. They had shitty rifles that they used to take out tigers. But really, like, the modern guns. We talked about in the forensics episode how gun crime was pretty high post war, and so, like, the general idea of a gun free Korea, that concept is comparatively pretty new. Shootings, murder by gun, they were pretty frequent, because at the time, just after the war, guns weren't collected by the government yet. There wasn't wasn't being regulated. Mm-hmm. So if anyone wants more information on that, and then just generally our forensics episode, I think is a good episode. It breaks down forensic science and whatnot in Korea, but there was this gun crime was almost rampant in post-Korean War. In 1965, in that single month of October 1965, there were various accounts of gun attacks, and newspapers were announcing at the time that gun violence was on the rise. I wouldn't be surprised if there was more gun violence. I didn't check this, but I wouldn't be surprised if in that month, in 1965, October 1965, if there was more gun crime in Korea than there was in the U.S.
Possibly.
So incidences that involved the military, the police were really common. In the 1970s, there was gun violence recorded every single year except for 1978. And this was kind of growing. And then it was really at that point, at the end of the 70s, October 79, that they finally did the real crackdown on gun ownership.
Mm-hmm.
And it was called the Voluntary Report on Unlawful Weapons. So confiscation, essentially. So gun ownership was outlawed, which meant, actually, not that it was illegal to own a gun, it was illegal to have an unregistered gun. And all registered guns had to be kept at police stations. You couldn't keep them in your home. And this is still the case today. If you want a gun, a rifle, and you have to point out why you want it, could be because of wild boars or birds, you know, damaging your farm or something like that, you get a rifle. And you register it, and then you have to keep it at the local police station. And after this happened, gun violence decreased. started decreasing, severely decreased, going into the 80s and then onward. But then going through the 80s, from the 80s through then to the 90s, gun use by cops still remained really high. And by July 1990, gun use by cops was four times higher than the previous year at the same time. So it was just increasing going through the 90s by police usage of guns, which was interesting because they weren't really supposed to use their guns unless, you know, if they were really prompted to, but they were using them, you know, like in a bunch of different cases. So, anyway, so still today, guns and other weapons, or ownership of guns and other weapons, is regulated by the Act on the Safety Management of Guns. Okay, get the whole name of this. Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
Act on the Safety Management of Guns, Swords, and Explosives. So, you're not allowed to have either of those, Joe. I know you just moved. I hope your swords and your explosives are registered. And the last time this was amended was in January 2015. So it's still the act that regulates the ownership. And it really started in 79 when guns had to be handed in, which ironically is the same year that Park Chung-hee was killed by a gun, assassinated with a gun.
Yep, with a gun.
Yeah. Not a civilian, though, of course. It was. We can go back and we have our episode about comparing Park Chung-hee and Putin. And we're going to have a listen to that. Now, interestingly, several years ago, there was a group of older Korean men that I used to meet now and again, and we'd hang out, we'd eat, we'd drink, and I became friends with them purposely because they were very nice people, generally just really, really nice guys. And they were all coworkers and friends. All of them were in their 50s and 60s. And I became close with them so I could get stories. They really loved hanging out and telling me stories about them growing up and stuff like that. One day, probably around 2015, and I think it happened right around an event that I'm going to share later on in the show. We started talking about guns.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there may have been a shooting in the US at the time as well. And so we just got to talking about guns and whatnot. And they, of course, they had all used guns because they did their military service and whatnot. And they all agreed, four older men, they all agreed that if guns were more common or easy to have in Korea, gun crime would be out of control.
Oh, I agree with that totally.
Do you?
Yeah. I'm sorry. I try to avoid politics whenever I can on the show, but my Republican friends in Korea that are also pro anti-gun control in the US, I just keep saying, like, can you imagine what it would be like if Korea had the same lax attitude towards guns as America did? Can you imagine?
It's Koreans who agree as well. These men, and they brought it up. I didn't even mention it. Like, we're just talking about whatever shooting it was at the time. And like I said, around 2015, and they just brought it up. And when one of them brought it up, and the other three were like, oh yeah, yeah, absolutely. And they felt very fortunate that guns were regulated and controlled. Because they said, it would be madness.
And with our high suicide rate, on top of that, we already make it hard to commit suicide, and people still are competing with Poland for suicide.
Yeah, yeah.
Just imagine. Then you get the people that want to go on the blaze of glory and just want to take everyone down with them. Oh yeah. My God. Yeah. I mean, we've had incidents like this before where people actually would want to burn to death to kill other people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the worst way to die. And they were still willing to do that.
Yeah. You know, just kind of off topic, but related to what you just said about wanting burning and burning other people and whatnot. Someone on the tour the other night, we started just before we started the tour, we're waiting around for everyone to join. And she said, "So on the tour tonight, are you going to talk about that guy who burnt himself?" I was like, "Which one? Who are you talking about? Like, which one are you talking about?
Podcast episode?"
Yeah. And I said, "Well, we have a," and then I said, "Well, we have a podcast and we have a whole episode about fire. We talk about self emulation." So she's like, "Oh, there's more than one." That's like, yeah, taxi drivers burn themselves in their cars. A couple of years ago, that was a big issue. Yeah. Go back and listen to our fire episode, everyone, if you haven't listened to it.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, yeah. So guns are heavily regulated. Koreans seem to be very happy about that. But like I said, Korea isn't without incident, even recently without incident.
We'll return to the podcast after this message.
Get our comic book, The Dark Side of Seoul, Weird Tales from Korean Lore, at our website, darksideofseoul.com, or get it at Comixology. If you're in Seoul, visit the Dice Latte near Hwaegi Station to get your copy. Written by me and drawn by Tim Bauer, it's 50 pages of folkloric dread. And now, back to the show.
So we'll just break down and go through some of the main incidences that have happened. And I want to go back first to 1965. So October. So I had mentioned just a little while ago that in October 65, there was so much gun crime that it made the newspapers, and the newspapers were saying how worrisome it was. It's on the rise. Things are getting worse in terms of guns. These are just a few of the incidences that happened in the first 2 weeks of October 1965. So the first one, right around the first day, I think this was around October 2nd, in Samchuk, which is in Gangwon-do, two armed robbers killed one and injured another. So there was an armed theft.
Mm-hmm.
Shot and killed one person, shot and injured another. Again, a few days later, in Samchuk, the military, there was military installments in that area. The military was engaged by two armed assailants in the nearby village, had a shootout with the military, and they got away. The assailants fled. They got away. Mm-hmm. Again, a day or two later, in Yeoncheon, in Gyeonggi-do, armed assailants confronted a nearby military guard post, started firing on the guard post. They were apprehended. It seems from the information I was able to find, it seems like they were apprehended. A couple days later, Hwacheon, also in Gangwon-do, again, armed assailants shot and killed two soldiers near an army unit. Now, these are all civilians, so with access to guns. On the Eastern Front, so the Eastern Front is what in those days it was still called the Eastern Front. So it's basically just the east side of Korea. But there's no specific location that I can find in the old newspaper articles from 65. An armed man attacked two people just on the street. Just attacked them. No one was killed, it seemed, but he walked up with a gun and started attacking these two people. Couple days after that, in Myeongju, again, Gangwon-do, two armed men kidnapped five people, held them for ransom, but those five people eventually escaped. All of that happened in the first 2 weeks of October 1965. And every single one of those incidences involved guns. So that's like modern day US levels of like gun daily kind of gun violence. So jump ahead to 1973. And this is where we get into some incidences of like actual well-known people who committed certain crimes. There was a man named E.J. Su. He was a soldier.
Mm-hmm.
He had a grievance with an ex-girlfriend. He left his barracks in search of her with guns. And while searching for his ex-girlfriend, he shot and killed eight people.
Okay.
Yeah. So he was caught. He was caught. but not before he killed 8 people, shot them to death.
Oh my.
Fast forward to 1982. Now, this is one of the that we've talked about doing an episode about this incident in the past, but I think we'll just stick it in here. Maybe we'll come back to it in more detail later. But on April 26th, 1982, Korea's worst mass shooting and killing spree occurred by Woo Bum-gun. And this was the world's worst mass killing spree up until 2011. There was the killing spree in Norway.
Mm-hmm.
And but this one from 82 to 2011 was the world's worst killing spree and included mass shootings and other weapons as well. And this was in Udyeonggun in Gyeongsangnam-do. So some background. Woo was in the Marines, very well respected, apparently a very good shot. And in 1978, he was discharged. Then he became a police officer. And he was a Blue House guard, which is considered a very prestigious position to be a guard at the Blue House. First of all, you live in Seoul. And in the 80s, that was kind of a dream for a lot of Koreans to be able to move to Seoul and have a job in Seoul. Yeah. So here he was protecting the president. So it was Chun Doo-hwan, unfortunately, but he was still protecting the president. Considered a very high, even today, police will consider being a Blue House guard to be kind of a step up. But Woo had some problem with the booze, like the drink, and he imbibed a little bit too often. He was an alcoholic. And his behavior and his drinking kind of got in the way of his career. And then he was demoted and he was sent to a rural area, which was Udyeonggun. And he was pretty upset with that. He was only 27 years old. He was still quite young, already had this respect and whatnot at this young age. But he had no choice. He was demoted, sent to a rural area down south.
Mm-hmm.
Had a girlfriend, a live-in girlfriend. One morning, Woo was asleep. His girlfriend was next to him in the bed, and a fly landed on Woo. So the girlfriend, whose name was Chun Mal-sun, decided to swat the fly. And when she swatted the fly, of course, she hit Woo, and this really pissed him off. And they had a big argument. He left the house. And then he reported to work at 4 p.m. At 7:30 p.m., he went home. He assaulted his girlfriend, Chun, and then he left home again. But where he went after work was the armory. He took several guns and other weapons, including grenades, and he started a killing spree at 9:30 that night.
9:30.
He walked through the street, shot a person on the street, his first victim. He then went into a local police station, killed 3 people there. He then went to a market, fired at the crowds, threw grenades, killed 6 people. And it just so happened that his girlfriend, Chun, was in the market at the time, and she was also injured, but he didn't know she was there. She went down to see what was going on because all this news was starting to get around that like gunshots were heard. And so she went out to kind of see what was going on. And she happened to be in the market. And then Woo went to various nearby villages, local villages, and he was wearing his police uniform. So he used the uniform as a way to gain entry into people's homes. Let this be a lesson to everyone. Never let a cop into your house.
Oh,
forget it. There's no way a cop's getting into my house without a warrant. No way. And people were just letting him, just trusted his uniform. In the first village he went to, he killed 18 people. Shot them all to death. He went into a home in a village while the family of 4 was sleeping, killed all 4 of them in their beds, shot them to death.
Oh.
He then went into another home where there was a funeral taking place, actually like a wake, the wake of the funeral. And when he went to the home, he was, you know, he was confronted by the people in the home, still wearing his uniform. And he told them that a North Korean spy was in the area. And so he was investigating. So they trusted him. They let him in. They invited him in to eat. They all sat down to eat together. And then Woo opened fire on the family and killed 12 people. Mm. He then left that home, went to a farm, told the family at that farm, again, that a North Koreans were in the area, spies or like communists or something were in the area. He was there to flush them out. They invited him inside. He told the family to gather in the living room where he held them hostage. So finally, when the cops got there, Wu detonated 2 grenades, killed himself and 3 of the hostages. In total, on that night, on that spree, that killing spree, Wu killed 55 people.
Wow.
And then a child who was a victim of the spree died later of wounds. So his total victims were 56. 36 people were injured, and the government really had no choice but to pay compensation to the families. The police response to this mass shooting, which was going on for hours, because, like I said, he started at 9:30. By the time he got to that farmhouse, it was 1:30 in the morning. So he was killing people for hours. The police response to the shooting, of course, was ridiculed, and they were really, a lot of people who were the higher-ups, even in government, ended up stepping down. They resigned. Chun Doo-hwan blamed the government for it, even though, you know, he killed people. He ordered the killing of people themselves. It took them 1 hour. Took the police 1 hour to respond to the first shooting at 9:30 p.m. And he was traveling in this fairly small area, and they couldn't find him. He was killing dozens of people, and they botched it. They just couldn't. They couldn't, or were afraid to track him down. Mm. It's kind of like the recent killing. Was it in Texas where you can see now where the cops were afraid to go into the school?
Yeah. Uvan. Oh gosh, I can't pronounce it. But yeah.
Uvalde, right. Yeah, they're just standing around, and like you see them running. One guy just cleans his hands and stuff like that. Just inept. What's the point of? It's just ineptness.
I'm sorry. I'm so. I wouldn't say jaded. I'm just so fatigued by this. I honestly feel bad, but also I just don't follow these things anymore.
It's heartbreaking. So this was, so the police response, again, like a lot of the other cases that we've talked about in terms of abuses, like Little Jungin and rapes, the police response is just so lax. It's just like, and then people wonder why people criticize the police.
Dandelions in their mouths. That's what it is. Yeah.
And then people will, you know, get confused why a lot of other people criticize the police. It's like, well, they give us enough reason to. So
I shit you not, in Anyang. Now, this is a while back. I mean, I would say like around 15 years ago, I saw this. I saw a group of police walking down the street and they were holding hands.
Kumbaya.
Just really, guys, come on, man.
Yeah, it's anyway. So, and the thing that really boils my potato about this is that the police response was so terrible. It was just absolute fucking shit. And then at the time, you know, cops were considered trigger happy pretty much at the time. There was a lot of issues with the cops themselves because people no longer had guns, but the cops still did. And then they were being a bit problematic, like I said previously, up through the 90s. But then they themselves could not respond to gun violence in any efficient manner. 55 people, and then later a young child died because the cops couldn't get to this guy in time. He wasn't even, you know, it's not like he was driving a spaceship and going between Seoul and Busan and all these different, he was traveling by foot. So he may have had a car actually going around, but still, he wasn't in a big area.
Yeah.
And you can follow a trail of violence. Guns are not quiet. And he was throwing grenades. He was detonating. That's how he killed himself. Those things aren't quiet. So it's just, anyway, so this was still today in Korea, of course, the most tragic and violent example of gun crime in Korea. So mass shooting, 1982. So go through. So like I said, the thing this really started to taper off a bit in the 90s. There were a couple of other incidences as well, but go a little bit more recent times to within the time that we've both been in Korea. In 2015, February 25th, there was a shooting in Sejong. Now, for anyone who doesn't know, Sejong's is a planned city. It's new. It's now where a lot of the government ministry headquarters are. I know a couple of people who live in Sejong. Ali, actually, from Pinpoint Korea in formerly Moon Bear Travel, but the What's On Your Mind podcast.
Mm-hmm.
She's going to university in Sejong. It's a lovely spot. But in 2015, there was a shooting there. There was a man, surnamed Kang, killed his ex-girlfriend's family. And his girlfriend's surname is Kim. And killed three people with a shotgun. And they were his ex-girlfriend's boyfriend at the time, her father, and her brother. Mm. He first shot the brother in the head while he was getting in his car. It was like 8:30 in the morning. Just walked up to him and shot him in the head with a shotgun.
Ugh.
He was on his way to work. He then shot the father. He then entered the home shot the father while he was sitting down eating breakfast. And then he went to a convenience store where the ex-boyfriend was working. He was the manager there and shot him in the store. And then he set the store on fire. Now, the girlfriend was not killed. She was in the Seoul area at the time. So she wasn't. She may have been targeted and he may not have known that she wasn't around, but if he had found her, he may have killed her. But it turned out after that Kang, the shooter, and Kim, the girlfriend, they had issues over that convenience store about ownership and management, a little bit complicated. So that may have been the catalyst behind this. Then Kang himself was found dead in a nearby riverside. He had committed suicide. It was found after that he had used two shotguns. Both of them were legally registered to his daughter. So he just got them and went and killed three people with them. That was it. Mm-hmm. That was just in 2015. So just a second. My cat's scratching to get out. Just a second. Entertain everyone, Joey.
I'm entertaining in case I forget to edit this out. We'll see if I'll edit this out.
Okay. And we're back. So, and then a couple of years after that, and this was an issue, something that I remembered. 2018, August 21st, there was a shooting at a Buddhist temple. In Bonghwa-gun, which is in Gyeongsangbuk-do, and in a local government office, an elderly man, 77-year-old man, had some problem with his neighbor. Not sure what it was. Something about their land, maybe like where their land property lines or something like that. And the old man had gone to the district office to try to get them to solve it. Apparently, there's no satisfaction with them, which isn't surprising. No satisfaction from the government. Not surprised. But this man decided to take it to the levels of violence. Got his shotgun. Knew that the neighbor was in the nearby Buddhist temple. Went to the temple and shot him. Shot him on the temple grounds. Yeah. Then the old man went to the district office. That didn't help him with his complaint. And opened fire. And he shot two officers. Two, you know, district, the civil servants. Before he was wrestled to the ground. By other officers and some other locals who were in the office at the time. And they were able to get the gun from him. The neighbor, fortunately, lived. He was just shot in the shoulder. And someone got to him in time before he bled out. One of the district officers survived. I think he was also shot in the shoulder. He survived. But one of the officers was killed, shot and killed. Mm-hmm. And I think he was dead on sight. And again, that gun was legally registered. It was a legally registered gun. He had it because he lived on a farm. And usually what you do, like I said, if you say you have a problem with like a birds or boars or something, you can get the gun. So he just went into the office or to the police station where his gun was being kept as per the law. Told him, he said, okay, I need my gun. They're like, oh, you have a problem with birds? He's like, yeah, the birds are back. Gotta get rid of them. They're like, okay, here's your gun. And you gotta have it back tonight. He's like, okay, no problem. And then off he went and started and then shot three people. Probably would have shot more if he wasn't tackled in the office. And then going to the final thing that really was the catalyst for the idea for this episode. The do-it-yourself guns, homemade guns, which was brought on, again, like I said before, by the assassination of Abe. And I'll say, after Abe was assassinated, I was pretty shocked, actually, when I was reading about it, because it was a Saturday morning, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And I had a hiking tour. And so I got up that morning, I was getting ready, and I checked the news and it's like, oh, Abe got shot. That's weird. That's unfortunate. And we didn't know that he was dead yet. And then it turned out that he died. So the issue, I think, shocked a lot of people. And I asked a lot of Koreans about it. And even though Abe wasn't a popular politician among Koreans, everyone that I spoke to was really shocked by it.
Okay, because I read the article in Korea Exposé, mm-hmm. where it was kind of like a litmus test of where you stood on the political spectrum, and like there was a competition of like, yeah, you couldn't say that you're a progressive unless you cheered Abe's death.
Really?
Yeah. That's weird. That's
so weird.
That's why I say, right? It's the rest of the world's conventions of what right and left is in Korea is not insane.
Yeah,
it's faction. It's just pure factionalism, just dressed in different, just dressed in those terms.
Right. Yeah. So unfortunately, homemade guns, do-it-yourself guns, kind of a bit of a problem in Korea in the past several years, and a bit of a major issue because. The technology to make them, the tech that's required to make them, is really simple.
And it's done pretty well in Korea.
Yeah, and I read a comment recently from someone describing the technology that goes into making homemade guns as being 13th century. And that's part of the problem, this commenter said, is that we are now so far removed from the 13th century that making something that's from 13th century point of view is really easy for most people today, even with people with lower education. Just people with no high school is still, or probably still, more intelligent than people of the same age in the 13th century. Right. Mm. So they're easy to make. And this is frightening. That's terrifying to me that they're that easy. And many people use the internet to learn how to make these guns. But otherwise they are easy to make. So there are a couple of issues. The first one that I remember hearing about was in 2007. Mm. This was in Chungcheongnam-do. There was a shooting. A man made a gun. This is a homemade gun. He went into a local park and he started shooting. Started shooting at people. But he didn't hurt anyone. I guess he was a bad shot, and people were able to hide and get away, and then he was apprehended. But yeah, that was 2007. That's how long ago that this has been something that's people have been able to do. A few years later, 2010, there was a high schooler, a boy, who was caught making guns at home. So people have thought, was he a potential school shooter? Would this have been a school shooting in Korea if he wasn't caught? And he also said that he learned how to make guns online. But his intentions, what he was meaning to do with the guns, were never made clear. Mm. Not that I could find, anyway. And then fast forward to 2016, and this is the big one. So this was October, October 20th, 2016. A man named Sung Byung Dae made guns. First of all, some of his background, he had criminal history. Convicted 9 times for sexual assault and violence. He had served 9.5 years in prison, but was released in 2012 for raping a teenage girl. Mm. He was wearing, he was supposed to wear an ankle bracelet, an anklet, you know, a tracker. He somehow disabled it, according to the information I was able to find. He was able to disable it.
He knew the password.
He knew the password.
It was, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4
Superman. Yeah. He hated cops, but he was at the point of hating cops, so he wanted to be violent towards cops. Mm-hmm. Awful. I'm not a big fan of the police, but I'd never be violent towards police.
Right.
So, vengeance.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but I just finished watching Ms. Marvel.
Okay.
And, there was a good line in there from, it was the imam, the leader of the mosque. And there was something about even though your enemies hate you, you still shouldn't hate your enemies. Something like that.
Yeah,
kind of what you're saying too. It's like, yeah, even though you don't like cops, you don't want to do violence towards cops.
No. I would never ever even consider it. But he was violent. He wanted to kill cops. He wanted revenge on cops catching him for all the criminal shit that he did, including raping a teenage girl. So he had a beef with the cops for him being a piece of shit. So a real charmer, this guy. So
sounds like another Yoo Young Chul.
Yeah. So, but the thing is, Sung hinted at making an attack on the police on his social media. One of his posts, he said, this was just in a post, I want to kill as many cops as possible. And then a couple days later, he posted kind of weirdly on his social media directions from Gangbuk-gu police station. Now, no one's sure, Gangbuk is the north part of Seoul.
Yeah.
So, he posted directions from Gangbuk-gu police station to Opaesan Tunnel. That's up in the north. And there's a lot of tunnels up around the north because there's so many mountains in the northern part of Seoul. And it just so happened that Opaesan Tunnel is where the attack took place.
Mm.
So he was hinting at what he was going to do. And then he posted another comment on social media. He said, "I will destroy cops in 2 or 3 days." He was giving a timeline on what he was going to do on his social media, which also isn't unusual. We've seen a lot of people who do mass attacks and things like this. They often post on social media.
Yeah.
So in preparation for the attack, Sung went online and he found some DIY gun videos, learned how to make guns. At the time of the attack, on his person, he was carrying 6 homemade guns. They were just made out of wood and pipes, and they were held together with duct tape.
Okay, it's not 3D printed.
No. But so that those were the 6 guns he had on him. But nearby, he had 11 more homemade guns, along with 7 knives, a hammer, and explosives. And whether those explosives would have worked or not, we don't know. Fortunately, he didn't detonate them. And he was wearing a bulletproof vest and a helmet. He was prepared. Now, the early stage of the attack on the police involved him getting the police attention.
Mm-hmm.
So he attacked his former landlord, who he also apparently had some issues with. And he attacked the landlord with a hammer, the hammer that he had with him. So, of course, this prompted people to call the cops. So a single officer was dispatched named Kim Chang-ho. And when he showed up, the shootout ensued.
Mm-hmm.
Sung shot and killed Officer Kim. And then other police showed up and they had a standoff that lasted for about an hour. And in the shootout, going back and forth between the cops and Sung, an elderly man was also shot.
Mm.
But he survived. Fortunately, it didn't kill him. So this was just in 2016.
Mm.
So Sung was apprehended, of course, and he was sent to prison for murder and for attempted murder and things like that. And I think he has life in prison now, considering his criminal background and then this.
Yeah.
So he just escalated from violence to sexual assault to rape and rape of a minor, especially, yeah. And then murder and attempted killing.
Yeah.
Now the big issue with the Abe assassination is it has caused some fear of copycat crimes in Korea. I'm sure in Japan as well.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also caused an issue in Korea. And so the cops are currently running as we're recording, they're running a campaign, a crackdown campaign, going from July 11th to August 15th, 2022, to find these tutorial websites and videos that teach people how to make guns.
I love how they announce their crackdown so you have a head start right. to hide your evidence.
I know. It's weird. They're like, okay, let's wait.
And they'll tell you when the crackdown is over too. So you're like, oh, okay, we're done.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. And even sillier than that is that they have regular crackdowns twice a year, and they also announce when they do those.
Yeah.
So daft, completely daft. Mm-hmm. Now it might actually be smoke and mirrors, and just saying that that's when they do it but then they don't. They do it like just before, just after, right? Mm. That's possible. And I wouldn't be surprised.
Because I haven't seen any road traps for drunk drivers since the last time they announced a crackdown on drunk driving. And that was years ago.
They had one up here at mine. I see them now and again on the highway near me. I saw one.
I saw a lot of them for a while.
2 weeks ago?
No more for years.
Right. Yeah. But yeah, I don't know. So, like I said, I know I have, hopefully they're keeping tabs on everything now. So we'll have to see. Mm. But part of this campaign is not only finding domestic sites and tutorials, but also foreign sites and whatnot. I think things like this are also on YouTube, but I'm not sure if YouTube has a system where they'll block videos like that. They'll take them down. I'm really not sure. Mm. Now I'm curious. I should actually check, but I'm scared down the check. Then they're going to catch my IP and get flagged and come knock on my door.
Yeah.
So I'll go to a PC bung and do it.
Yeah, so, do that. Cause you're anonymous.
Yeah. Right. I'll pay a little kid to do it. Hey, little boy, what day is today? Here's this money. Go search the internet.
And go give me the finest goose in the window.
But anyway, just a final note. Posting anything about homemade guns, do-it-yourself guns online does carry prison term of up to 3 years and a fine of up to 7 million won.
Mm.
For posting tutorials.
Wow.
And them's the facts.
Wow, that's like a lot of people's credit card debt.
Yeah. Roughly mine.
We'll return to the podcast after this message.
Take a walk through Seoul's 500 years of ghastly murders, forbidden history, and hidden scandals. Listen to tales of Korea's deepest, darkest secrets. What lies under the concrete? Or who? The Dark Side of Seoul Ghost Walk at darksideofseoul.com. Book now, if you dare.
Do you have any listener mail?
We do, and I'm going to avoid media for this week. I don't think we need media to...
Not for this.
There's a lot of movies with guns in them. But yeah, we do have listener mail, and we love getting listener mail and reviews and stuff like that. There's actually, like I said, I think I said in the last episode, we're getting a backup now. So if you send us a message or something, we probably will read it on the an episode. But it's going to take a while.
Yeah, email us at info@darksideofsoul.com. info@darksideofsoul.com.
Right. Or just contact directly through Instagram as well. This is another review because we're getting so many tours these days. And this is from Monica V, who gave us a review via TripAdvisor. And Monica said, one of the highlights of my trip to Korea. This tour is 100% worth it, and you will definitely find yourself wanting to stay for the extended version. Seoul is full of ghost stories, and the tour guide does a very good job of going into just enough detail to keep you intrigued without getting bogged down in too many historical details. It's just right. Completely recommend this tour for anyone interested in history, ghosts, demons, and anything dark. It's super fun.
Bogged down in historical details because he's a hack. Yeah, Monica was great. Monica, I loved it because she was like the only one who hadn't booked an extended version. And as soon as I did my opening spiel about some of you booked the regular, some of you booked the extended version. After that, she's like, how do I get on the extended version?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And so she did it. She was great. She was great.
Yeah. I had a group last night with Paige Schultz. Hello, Paige. Paige actually is a podcast fan, so she was Paige is in Korea as of recording. Paige is still here with some family. I think they are six of them total. And
you must not like your family, Paige.
and they book the regular, but unfortunately they were tired and they weren't able to stay on for the extended. But
oh my gosh, yes, yeah. That's so, why we split it up, because some people do get exhausted. Yeah,
and so but a lot of other people have decided to stay on. Yeah, so Andrea Perez actually was one who stayed on the other night, right at the beginning, and everyone else was staying on the extended, and Andrea just said, "Oh, okay, I'll just pay you now. I'll just pay you now for the extent. I'll just stay on." She just decided right at the beginning. So it was great.
Yeah. So, yeah. I love that.
Yeah.
Cause you find out it's like, and there's nothing wrong with that. You can still just like book the regular and then decide later on if you want to do the extended, just, you know, either we can charge your card or just, you can just pop and give us a tenner or something.
Yeah. Just give us the 10,000 then. It's easier for everyone.
Yeah. It's a choice, because some people just can't handle the law. The extended is really for the hardcore enthusiasts.
Yeah. It's a lot of walking. Yeah. So, but that detail there that Monica said about how it's not bogged down in historical details, I just want to comment on that quickly. That's on purpose.
That is true.
When you go on a tour and there's research and whatnot that clarifies this and indicates that this is true. When people go on tours, they generally speaking do not want to be educated. They want to be entertained.
Right.
Education is tertiary, not even secondary. It's tertiary to a tour, and it happens naturally. You just pick up on details, and most people are very likely not going to remember deep historical details, like names. Like names, years that things happened. No. All of those things don't matter.
I dropped the years just to show I've done my research, but I don't expect anyone to know the years.
Right. And what I usually do, I do mention a year, I think at one point, just at the building of Gyeonghi-gung, but to kind of just put it in a frame of reference of the time. But people will ask me like, what year did this happen? And then I can tell them.
Yeah.
Or
you're better at this than I am.
or if I mention somebody, like I talk about Gwanghae-gun, but I don't say his name. It's not necessary.
I don't mention him at all.
Right. So then somebody might say, "Oh, what's the king's name?" I was like, "Oh, it's Gwanghae-gun." So then I'll tell people if they ask me.
But one question I get asked every time, and I keep forgetting, is I talk about that K-pop video that was filmed over at
Gwangnado?
Yeah, Gwangnado station. And people get ask me, "What video is it?" And I'm like, I keep forgetting the name of it.
Just
go to our podcast. Just go to our podcast.
right. Yeah. So that's the difference between, like, I've been on tours with people who know their content because they research, but they also know the methods of communication. And so they deliver excellent tourism, an excellent tourism product, as we'd say in the industry.
You're giving people free samples, and if they want to eat more of the dish, they can do it. Our job is to get people excited about the samples.
Well, yeah, and then the whole point is to get them to look up more information themselves after.
Yeah,
that's the goal.
Enthusiasts, and that's what I love. I love hearing people getting really interested in Korean history and culture because they went on the tour that they otherwise would not have done. Because one reason we created the tour was people were coming into Korea and they were taking these bland, overloaded propaganda tours, and they would just leave Korea with such a nothing muffin impression of this country we love so much. Like, "Oh, no, we're Japan and China are so much better to go to." And like, no, you're missing out on Korean history. No.
Right. And then, like, what I was just saying, though, is that, so I've been on tours with guides who know they have all the information, but they've also studied guiding or they have experience in guiding. So you can't just be a guide. You can't be a travel guide. You can't be a tour. You can't just say, if you're an online influencer, you're not suddenly a tour guide either. Also, I should say.
You have vendetta against the influencers.
Well, that drives me nuts.
Keep going. We'll continue this drama.
Right. But my main point is, I've been on tours with historians and professors who also didn't study don't have a, or didn't study or don't have a background in guiding, and their tours are fucking terrible. They're boring.
They're boring. They're I've
there's just so like much, so much information.
Yeah. It's just, yeah, it's the information fire hose they throw at you.
Right.
And it's like,
right.
Oh, God.
Yeah. And then there'll be someone then say like David Mason's the opposite, where David is a professor. He's deeply invested in his research for the last 40 years. And he's also studied guiding, so he knows which amounts of information to give. But I've been on tours.
He's got a great voice for storytelling. He's just right. Got that great voice. You know he's going to get in there.
Right. But I've been on tours with other guides in Korea, and their tours are awful. They're really, really boring.
I haven't been on many tours. Maybe that's why we're so good, is I don't know what a good tour is supposed to be. And I have nothing to say.
Well, I look at tours online and stuff like that as well. Oh. All the time. Yeah. There's a great guide at Cardiff Castle who's the introductory guide when people arrive. He's actually called roving, where he greets people and he has an introduction for people. Then he walks around, he roves and he talks to people and stuff like that. So, but anyway, we're getting on a tangent.
Sorry, guys. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's our little thing.
Mm. It's our professional. It's our job.
Yeah. Hey, we got a comic, you know?
Yeah, we do.
Yeah. We I got know. A comic. Sean, you know, we got a comic that you wrote. Yep. Yeah, we got the Dark Side of Soul Tales from Korean Lore comic. It's still, we're on our second printing. You can get it online. If you're outside Korea, you can get it online. I mean, when shipping is opened up around the world, international shipping is opened up from Korea, I will make it available for you to order it and have it delivered. But until then, you can get the online version on Amazon, on Comixology, which is Amazon.
Yeah.
The other places. Or you can go to the Dice Latte. Where's the Dice Latte now?
Dice Latte now is near Gunja Station. We'll give details a little bit, because as of recording, they haven't moved to the new location yet. This coming weekend's their last weekend at Huegi Station. And they'll be near Gunja Station, yeah, which is,
I think, on line 5. By the time the show is out, he's already moved.
Yeah, so maybe we'll just put it in the notes or something like that. Yeah. So I don't, because I haven't been to the new location yet, so I don't know the actual directions yet.
Okay. The Dark Side of Soul podcast is produced by Joe McPherson, Sean Morrissey, and Mia Rancati. The opening and closing music are by Sarak-san, which you can find on Bandcamp under Jeju Digital. We'd like to thank our top-tier patrons. I'm going to read this list backwards today. Laura Casey, Sean Jinhun Brown, Tony A, Sarah Ford, Mitchie Brewer, Chad Strauss, Steve Marsh, Gabby Palomino, Ashley Rigby, Ryan Berkerbaugh, Alex Rudia, Minsuk Lee, Devin Hifner, Sharon Cullen. Hey, I keep getting messages that your loot is waiting for you. Australia Post is sending me messages for you for some reason. Joel Bonamini and Angel Earl. If you want to join this cadre of cadavers, it's made that up. You can go to patreon.com/darksideofsoul. Starting at just $5 a month, you can get a lot of extra content. And if you're willing to become one of our top tier patrons, we'll actually mention your name with these people. Lovely, lovely people. And you get loot mailed to you every month. One of our new patrons was asking me where his loot was. I'm like, it takes a while. It does take a while to get there, but it's coming.
But if you just joined, you missed this month. Yeah, right.
Oh no, it's coming. It just takes a while to come.
Right.
All right, guys. Thank you. Be careful out there. Until next time, stay spooky.
Good night.